Welcome to the show. We got Vern from Cinema Recall on here tonight. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Cam. How you doing, buddy?
Very good. Very good. I'm your host, Cam, and we've got a hell of a show. We were just going back and forth on music composers, and the recalls were delightful enough to say, I've heard them. I know I've seen the movies they do music for. I don't know them by heart. So then he referenced a few other names. I was like, oh, I know those guys. I'd be happy to do an episode on them. And here we are. We're getting into all kinds of other just deep dive into music artists who are a mixture of mainstream and kind of low budget. And they may not be John Williams or Hans Zimmer, but they are pretty big.
Oh, 100%.
And so we are discussing Cliff Martinez. I know him mainly from his work on Red Hot Chili Peppers, but it was like early. But he also has done ones for bands I'm not too big on, like the punk bands, the Weirdos and Dickies, as well as Captain Beefheart. And he claims he has a lot of avant-garde roots, as well as punk rock influence in general. And he quoted in a recent interview with Valingo that the great Anthony Robbins said, when you're satisfied or really content, that's when you really get into trouble.
So like, was he the drummer for Red Hot Chili Peppers, like during like Blood Sugar Sex Magik, or even before that?
That's what I'm looking up. And he's been around for a while. And I mainly just knew him from his work for Steven Soderbergh.
Kafka,
The Limey, Solaris, Contagion, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, and The Nick. And a Contagion, especially that score, that just really got under my skin. It could be any kind of electronic thing, but it was just really cool to just kind of see where he went for that.
I need to go back and rewatch that again because I don't quite remember the music score of that. The one of his that I remember the most when he collaborated with Steven Soderbergh was Solaris.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I am going to upset a lot of like cinema lovers and say that I prefer the remake over the original.
All good. I need to rewatch it. I just saw the original probably about 3 years ago. So Cliff started out, he's credited for doing drums as well as music writing, for the first album they did, that is, you know, of the same name in 84. So
yeah. Oh, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Okay.
Right. And the other ones were Freaky Styly, the Abbey Road EP, What Hits, and Out in LA. So yeah, very early 80s and 90s. And it was wild. I did bring him up for my dad, and he was like, it's not, if he was with the band, it had to be earlier. I'm like, well, kind of half true. It was both early and kind of just in general. But so yeah, that he worked on all other kinds of Soderbergh stuff, like The Underneath, Schizopolis, as well as I can't speak today, and King of the Hill.
King of the Hill, Traffic is another one. I think his first collaboration with Steven Soderbergh was Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Mm-hmm. And I'm actually surprised at how he's gone on and done some other international productions. And other people probably know him better for his Nicholas Refn Winding Refn work. But I had no idea that he did the score for Mia Coppa, which is a pretty cool French remake. You've seen it. Like, that's the same material that Point Blank is based off.
Really? Okay. I didn't know he did score for that. That's cool. Okay.
Yeah. Spring Breakers.
Oh yeah.
Arbitrage, the Lincoln Lawyer movie version as well. But yeah, it was wild you brought up Solaris, because I had no idea he also worked on Narc and Wonderland. And you know, it's been a minute since I've seen either one. You know, one is a great crooked cop mystery, and the other is a tell on John Holmes with an unrecognizable role by Val Kilmer. And I was like, that makes sense, because those were just all together just gritty. And I'm sure he has some cool just kind of build up. More recently, he has done The Foreigner with Jackie Chan and Chris Brosnan, Den of Thieves, Game Night, and Kimmy, once again for Soderbergh, as well as Hotel Artemis, which I think I saw, but I definitely don't remember anything about it.
He also did the score for Pump Up the Volume.
You're right. And if you want to go feature. Way back, I'm like, yeah. Whoa. And Wicker Park that. And Black, a movie called Black Magic from 92, as well as Wicked, which if anyone has seen is the psycho thriller with young Julia Stiles.
So. Oh, he also composed an episode of Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, wow.
Which is be kind of cool. I couldn't quite find that episode or where it was located at, but that was actually very cool to learn about that. Oh, but I'll ask you, Cam, you know, do you remember the first music of his that sort of stood out for you? Or
Definitely Contagion. Like just
Contagion. Okay, that one. Okay.
I went down my spine. I was pet sitting, catching up on blockbusters from the previous year. And on the whole, that movie, I just really dug it. And I mean, obviously, you know, Drive, nothing against it. I think everyone mainly just remembers the main song that's featured in the opening credits. But yeah, I mean, this is what's also cool is he's also done some indie stuff. Like he did the infamous Havoc, First Snow, which is a thriller with Guy Pearce, as well as Stiletto, which is an unusual, you know, B-movie vigilante film. And I think this is just cool to know that this is, he's that kind of guy. He'll, if he knows you and you clear the check and he feels like he can illustrate your crime underworld or just other kind of just dramatic focus, then he's down to do it. And I think that's just what's so cool is just he's just kind of that go-to now is like, you need something just really grim, really dark. He's that guy.
And he fits the tones very well. And you were talking about Drive and how everyone remembers the music, which is like the synth wave type of thing going on.
Definitely in Drive. Some synth wave influence. Yeah.
But he matches the songs very well. And I just rewatched Drive not too long ago. And the way that he uses percussions and bass, especially in like just a normal walking scene of the driver for the driver, that car chase. It's weird because you listen to the car chase and other sequences where it has nothing to do with driving and the tones feel very similar. And the way that it can go from a song to a score and not feel abrupt, which is a very cool thing.
Very abrupt.
Well,
he really does collaborate like strongly. Like he described in a DP 30 interview from 2016, which covers the oral history of Hollywood, on how he will have back and forth conversations with his directors. And as a result, the minute they get called in for that movie, he's already had his own ideas that have just gone around. And so he naturally evolves. He naturally collaborates instead of just, hey, I got a phone call, you know?
And so weird too, because I always thought with Nicholas Winding Refn, I always thought Cliff Martinez did sound work for Bronson, which he didn't do, but there's a lot of sound choices in Bronson and score choices that are in that movie that sort of lead their way into Drive. And when I was rewatching Bronson and I was listening to the score of that movie, I'm thinking, is this Cliff Martinez did this one? But no, that wasn't him. It was another guy, but
similar guy.
it seems like they've been like collaborating very well with them, because I know that he worked with Nicholas Winding Refn about the same amount of time as Steven Soderbergh did.
Mm-hmm. And
for projects.
You also just don't want a duo that just doesn't, you know, gel. You know, you do want that. You want someone who's like, hey, you know, I've discussed this. I didn't just make it up as I went along. Now, don't get me wrong. Everyone's going to give their two cents, and even others working on it won't realize until it's afterwards. You know, you'll see it, you'll hear it all the time, how writers didn't realize how similar it was to their own work because they're living and breathing films. So everything sounds similar or different depending on their perspective.
Yeah.
It's tough to even argue about genres though, because everyone's got a different understanding of what that is. And it all comes down to however it got marketed too. So
that's true. Yeah. Oh, so I mean, if Contagion was the first, experience with Cliff Martinez,
I mean, I'd seen his other movies, but I didn't put two and two together. Like,
oh, sure. No, like, but has there been like a, would you say Temptations is your favorite score, or is there like one you enjoy more?
Oh, 1,000%. But don't get me wrong, like all the other movies definitely have, regardless of whether you like those movies or not, you should totally seek them out and just see the moody undercurrent that he is crafting. And it's just kind of cool to know that, like you say, he just, he's created such a signature style for these two giant filmmakers that, you know, it literally does write itself.
Yeah, because you can't really, you know, see a Steven Soderbergh movie without having the music from Cliff Martinez. I mean, even the work he did with Traffic, I don't think the musical score of that was as strong as other features. I think the visual style of Traffic.
That was another movie he did. Did you ever see that one?
I have not seen The Company You Keep. I have no idea.
Robert Redford as an environmental guy accused of being a terrorist who goes on the run. That in The Foreigner, as well as his Far Cry 4 video game, those all had just some very abstract beats.
Oh.
And when he does the electronic, you know, it's not, you know, it really is actually in your face. And before you know it, you know, you just, man, what a hell of a movie. That's pretty cool.
I think the score for me, where I can just listen to it by itself and get really involved with it, is the score for The Neon Demon. And I'm mainly talking about the moment when our lead character has a photo shoot and she sees images of herself. Mm-hmm. And that score, when she has a transformation, that score that happens with the tones being enhanced, just really, and it's one of those scores I can listen to it and be like, oh yeah, it's this scene from this movie. Or listen to another track like, oh yeah, that's the scene when she's driving in a car with someone, or this is the scene where she gets attacked, and I can just pinpoint different moments of that.
Well, and that's, I do love soundtracks that do that, that make you not only recall what scene it's in, but even go the extra mile of reminding you, hey, you know, here's why that's, it reminds you why the scene is so awesome in whatever movie you're doing, because you want, you don't want it to just be like, it's great in the movie, and then you, because there are some who I love, but then I will listen to the soundtrack, I'm like, it's just not the same. I don't know why, if it's my mood or what.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating to hear that he's a drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which is this California punk band. And for him to move from that, and I would say that he does sort of like electronic scores. In some
definitely
capacities.
Electronic, because that's just what he's based it on. According to AllMusic, he was born in the Bronx, New York, in 54, and however, he was raised in Columbus, Ohio, and then moved to California just as the punk movement gathered its pace in 1976. But I do find it interesting that he got fired after by Anthony Kiedis and Flea of the Chili Peppers after the 87 album, The Uplift Mofo Party Plan, because they felt his heart was no longer in the band, and he did not dispute that. He's like, yeah, I don't care anymore. I want to do my own thing.
Yeah, that's cool. I hate to say this to you, but I sometimes get Cliff Martinez confused with Clint Mansell.
Yeah, similar style of
some,
name.
Some names right there.
Good to see.
And sometimes the musical styles are, you know, somewhat similar. So when you put together this episode, Cam, I'm thinking, oh, sweet. Yeah, the guy who did the music for Requiem for a Dream and Pie and a bunch of Darren Aronofsky films. I'm like, no, it's Clint Mansell. He worked with Steven Soderbergh and Nicholas Winding Refn. But I would like to have a score composed by both of them, because I think that would be very cool, because
Clint Mansell, man. Now you're talking a dream team. Now you're talking the Expendables of music, where you get all the your favorite movie composers and have them combine on one epic score.
Just like one little thing at a time right there. I don't have you done an episode on Clint Mansell yet? I'll have the
not yet. I put you down, but I mean we did a awesome one on Trevor Rabin and Mark Mancina, and we're talking about like how they both have collaborated a few different times, both in the Con Air soundtrack and for a 90s Yes album. But
oh really,
what's awesome is they both got into it differently. And my guest composer's podcast, he's amazing. He noted how basically Mancino was a Hans Zimmer student, and Raven was got into it because he was doing the music for The Glimmer Man, and Steven Seagal said he thought he had it in him to be a composer.
Really?
So one good thing, Steven Seagal did. But Cliff, I think he didn't even need any motivation. He just went wherever he went, and then he just kept, you know.
I mean, but it's so strange for to be like, you know, drummer for this. I don't think Red Hot Chili Peppers really made it big because he didn't do the drums for Mother's Milk, and that's my first
right. That's the main one we all know. So I mean, so he was just there. It's kind of like Richard Patrick on Nine Inch Nails. He's like, okay, it's cool you were there, but for a little minuscule, like you're that's the beginner level thing you put on your resume. What your later stuff is what we mainly know you from. You know,
but it's still kind of cool that he went from that, and then he found a gig working for Pee Wee's Playhouse.
How many episodes did he do? Just like
he one? He did one.
Wow. Well, do you have an idea what episode is it? Some of the music?
I'm looking that up right now. It just says one episode. I can't. And
there's so much party music on that show.
There is. And I'm like, how do you know for sure? I thought for a minute there that, did he help compose the theme song to the show? But no, that's not the
case. I wish.
That would be cool. But yeah, then from that to have a first feature for Six Flags and Videotape, and I know Six Flags and Videotapes are like catapulted the independent film movement.
I did have an opportunity to re-see it a year ago, and man, that scores definitely complements the voyeurism. It's just, again, he's good at doing low key. Sorry, I don't have anything else to say.
I mean, I have not seen the movie in ages, but his next movie after that was Pump Up the Volume. And I remember Pump Up the Volume having this great soundtrack for it. A lot of great singers and artists are on that one. But what I really enjoy is his ability to get into the mindset of the characters and really show the intensity of the scene. There's one moment he's talking to this kid, and the kid is talking about how he wants to, you know, shoot himself and that he's alone no one loves him.
Christian Slater's character, in an otherwise entertaining movie. Yeah.
And Christian Slater's character is going, hey, you know, we're all alone, you know, we're all scared, you know. Spoiler alert for the movie. After the kid does, you know, commit suicide.
By now.
Okay, so after the kid commits suicide, there's a sequence where he's Christian Slater's character tells listeners, like, you know, yes, we're all alone, we're all scared. Isn't it better to do something, you know, crazy and fucked up than putting a brain in your head? And the more that he gets amped up, the more the music and the story kind of gets amped up. And it's... it's weird because it's like this distorted guitar somewhat going on with it. And you put that with like effects of a radio on top of it. It sounds like a distorted guitar inside this distorted radio. And the way that Christian Slater's character gets more and more amped up, so does the guitar, until it becomes like sporadic and distorted, and it just sounds like the inside of someone's head just going through this breakdown in a way. And I really kind of enjoyed that. And you put that in with like songs from the Pixies and Leonard Cohen, and it's this way that Trent Mansell can sort of move from a song into a score and have it feel like it's part of that song.
Well, and that says a lot, because there were so many songs by different artists in that, and you can tell which is the main score versus, and but it complements. They all
That's the meme. It's not like off. It doesn't feel off with some of that. So yeah, looking back, and I have not seen many of the movies that he composed music for. I've not seen Kafka. He did one with Steven Soderbergh, Grey's Anatomy. Have you seen that one?
I have been unfortunately not able to see it, but I'm always trying to discover new Soderbergh stuff. Like, I'm always like I'm seriously, I'm all excited. I know some people find him overrated, but I love that man. I really legit. He is my indie god. And I know other people do the whole Robert Rodriguez and Kevin Smith. And for me, it's got to be Soderbergh, because he's just embraced all kinds of technology and he doesn't seem like an asshole or stuck up guy to get along with. And
I love the fact that Steven Soderbergh does, you know, big blockbusters like Ocean's 11. Mm-hmm. And then turns around and does an independent feature with a adult film star, The Girlfriend Experience with Sasha Grey.
Right. Who would have expected that?
You know, like just does stuff like that. Have you seen his latest film, Kimmy?
Yes. That's my favorite of the year. I mean, technically I call, if it's straight to streaming, I count that the same as made for TV direct to video, but it really is really just an admirable effort. Like, I think more people even need to see it. Because the irony is they started it filming before COVID broke out. Or no, they didn't film. They just had the script ready. It was David. He was working with David Cope of Panic Room fame. And it's a very similar script to that movie. Mm-hmm. And it just kept evolving. He just knew, okay, whatever happens, whatever the idea is, I want to work with my digital technology. I want to work with Zoe Kravitz because she's amazing. And then just go from there. And what's funny is I actually reviewed that on Valerie Cameron's, you might know her from the Movies That Make Us podcast. And she was doing it on her Val in the Morning show, and she had an excuse to finally see it. And what's funny is she was so distracted watching it the whole time, because she's like, oh my God, that guy playing one of the hitmen, that's my acting teacher.
Really? Oh, wow.
And so she loved it even more, just because I was like, awesome. As long as you saw a movie that you otherwise wouldn't have seen. You know?
Oh, that's epic. Oh, that's so cool. These, you know, people you met in the past are, you know, in these features.
He doesn't have any dialogue. And it's definitely one of his best performances, because he's so intimidating. It just shows you that, I mean, this is what I overall like about him is, I think ever since Haywire and all these other things, like you say, he would do a movie with an adult model. He did a movie with an MMA fighter. And then he'd always have a gimmick to his indie movie. And I think that's just it. His diversity is what really, and even if I'm disappointed by his efforts, I will watch it again, because I see where he was going with it. And he's never made anything that I would just ultimately just say, oh, don't you ever watch that. You know, it's like, okay, better luck next time. He pretty much just, you know, voyeurism is his middle name. He is all about that. Just show all these private conversations, and just the casting alone. He was interviewed in an independent filmmaking book, and he talked about how he just did so many rehearsals with his actors behind the scene and just at parties, and just would be honest with them. I see you in this kind of role, to where everyone was literally ready when the cameras actually had to roll. So it's just like, That's great, because I see so many other times where it's just, you hear about all these other just terror stories about, you know, filmmakers and casts, you know, getting on each other's nerves because they just are like afraid to approach each other, or just haven't just done enough prep, so therefore everyone's being a horse's ass that day, you know.
Okay.
And so it's cool to know that, like you say, Cliff, you know, had all this backstory, done all these different kinds of things, and so he just seemed to be ready for any kind of project. Wherever the wind blew, he'd go.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
We're on all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
So I'll ask you this real quickly, Cam. I mean, because I know you mentioned Contagion as being one of your collaborations with Steven Soderbergh, and I'll go to mine next here. But was there like a sort of sequence in that movie?
The spreading animation, just even the B-roll where you just see all the isolated streets. Like, it really does get unnerving. It's... And again, just all different kinds of scores. There's more subdued piano, then there's more just simple acoustic, and then the electronics. So it's five different kinds of tones throughout there that really do complement the scene.
Yeah. But so I need to rewatch Contagion. I have not seen that movie in a while, so I can't really comment on the score.
Even if you can't find the movie, just listen to the soundtrack on whatever music plan you got, and he'll blow you away.
Okay. Very cool, because I know... Before this, I listened to a little bit of The Neon Demon because I do a lot of score, and I listened to a little bit from Solaris.
You do score work?
What's that?
You do score work?
Do I do score work?
Oh, sorry. I misheard you.
I was listening to his score for The Neon Demon, and I listened to the score he did for Solaris.
Okay, perfect.
And his work in Solaris.
The score in Solaris, yeah.
I like it because it's not your traditional type of score. It deals with a lot of like bells and
definitely
slow...
lots of bells. Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like little, like, almost it feels like you're in a wind chime.
Mm-hmm.
As I would describe the sort of score for Solaris, because Solaris, people thinking, hey, Steven, George Clooney, it's going to be a space movie.
Natasha McElhone, yeah.
But it's not that. It's a story about, you know, loss and
almost
relationships.
Almost a 2001 type ending where he's just like transforming through time almost. You know?
Very much so. And I thought it was very kind of ambitious for Steven Soderbergh to take this, you know, beloved 1970s Russian 3-hour long space movie into like a 90-minute tale. And I think that... Cliff Martinez's score really builds that up, especially in the moments when George Clooney and Natasha McElhone, you know, first meet, and you know it's clear that his wife's been gone for a while. If you don't know the story of Solaris, it's about the scientist who's been called to go back in space because strange things are happening aboard this space fleet. And
he's
when he shows up there,
he's getting sick and everything.
When he shows up there, his wife appears, and you know, his wife has been dead for a while, and she comes back, and you realize that other people's versions of themselves are coming back. Like people that other people have remembered from the past are coming back. And when the first Natasha McElhone's character and George Clooney's characters meet, there's a very kind of like somber romantic tone. But then when you start to realize what happened to her character, it becomes disjointed and a little frenetic. But at the same time, it's still very calm and ethereal. It's very cool.
Well, and that's definitely his typical style. He likes to circle around and he never feels overlong in any of his movies. At least not in my opinion. Cause when I, especially when I got to other recent stuff he did, like Unsane and Side Effects, is like, yeah, he's He's definitely the definition of experimental, and I think that's just it. Cliff likes to experiment as well.
Yeah.
It's his different tones. He wants to make every single part of the score not sound the same.
Mm-hmm. Well,
wants to have it fade into each other.
That's one that's, you know, that's one that kind of reminds me. But the other score I really love from Cliff Martinez is Spring Breakers.
It's a cool score.
I do enjoy very much. I think that I thought they were together on the Beach Bum, but they didn't. It was just on that. And it was actually a collaboration between Cliff Martinez and Skrillex.
Yeah, that makes
sense. To the point where, because the movie begins with the Scary Sprites and if you don't know the Spring Breakers, it begins with this montage of a bunch of exploitative images of women in beaches and just kids doing a whole bunch of bad things. But it's dubstep. It's got definitely that dubstep that I'll do my brown 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 brown. Sorry. Hate to break your lizard earbuds. Yeah, right. So you got that going on. But then at the very end of the movie, where our heroines are running to this mansion with machine guns, it's playing that same song from before, but it's now being orchestrated by Cliff Martinez, and it becomes a very beautiful song. Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna do it justice on here, but that's why I kind of liked about
Martinez's work. You tried, man. You tried.
No, I does do 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 do. I'm not gonna do it right here. No, I'm sorry. I'm not gonna bore your listeners with me trying to do dubstep impersonations. I mean, this is not for
you want to do.
This can't be the whole show. Just me doing dubstep impersonations. This is not gonna be different podcast. If we don't do it on this podcast, and think Cam will start doing that for money.
You know? For money.
Yeah, for me.
It's pretty.
What are you talking about? Do this for free. but you know what someone talked about, because he took like a pop song and recontextualized it into a score, and that's just one example of Cliff Martinez's work that I really do appreciate of what he does. And I think his work with Harmony Korine does very well. There are moments where the girls are just in a pool, and it's got this like very just one note. It's just like high note, dun 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 dun. Yeah,
it almost sounds the equivalent of like if you were to put a spoon to a glass, that echo effect almost.
And I know that when I listened to interviews with Cliff Martinez and Harmony Korine, that Harmony Korine wanted to make a movie that felt like a pop song, like a hip hop sample song, that's we had like repeated dialogue tracks, and the music does that in sequences as well. It's like kind of, it's like sampling. He's like sampling other score works and putting that into the music and making it his own. And I did that very much.
Yeah, it all resonates because it doesn't feel like, you say, autopilot or like just a random electronic guy who they just had to get, you know.
And you mentioned before too that, you know, he's very collaborative with his directors, and he sort of enhances the director's vision. So far, I mean, the only movies that I'm really familiar with him are the works he did for Steven Soderbergh and Nicholas Winding Refn and Harmony Korine. I saw the other movies on his biography. I'm like, I have not seen that movie. And I'm one of those persons that I like to see the movie. It's hard for me to like, you know, go and listen to a score without seeing the movie, because something else comes up in my head. Like, I heard the score for Daft Punk's Tron Legacy before I saw the movie.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a big Daft Punk fan. So of course I'm going to listen to everything that they do. Album. So
I feel like that whole album should be used in every movie trailer from this point on.
Oh my gosh, there is a whole yes, that's a good one there too. There's also another track that would be just fit perfectly for any type of like adventure Marvel trailer. But yes, that one, there's that little bit of da, 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 and that little I'm not doing this to justice.
Well, at least the love is coming through.
Thank you. Yes. But I listened to that score and then I saw the movie. I'm like, oh, it's good. But God damn it, guys, you could do more work. And now you disbanded Daft Punk. You could have done more movie scores. I would love that. Mm-hmm. But no. Oh, shoot. That's something we could put on the team too, that Daft Punk, because I think it is. They also did work for Gaspar Noé movies too.
Oh, really?
Like one half of Daft Punk scored Irreversible.
Wow.
So I bought the soundtrack to that because it was one half of Daft Punk. I think it was Thomas Bandel. I'm horrible with my French, but the other guy, Thomas Bandelander, did the music for Irreversible. So all the sounds that happened in that, that's all part of Daft Punk. So yes.
Sweet.
Oh, but then with Cliff Martinez, I guess he did some video game stuff, which I'm
Far Cry 4 is the only one I'm seeing so far, but I'm sure he'll do more.
All right. As I talked about, the Neon Demon has been probably one of my favorite scores of his. And we did Game Night.
Game Night, the 2018 comedy.
That
was a little more low key, but hey, you know, if you're paying attention to it, if you're a buff on that, you're gonna check out their work, you know.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. God forgives.
Everyone, you know, whatever music plan you got, if it's Google, Apple, whatever, Spotify, just listen to, sit down and listen to the various scores of your favorite composers and just see what, if it's good, but it doesn't stand out as much, or if it is unique. Hell, if it's even better than the actual movie, you know, it's just, you never know until you know.
Is there like one do you think of his that's better than the movie?
Maybe the Neon Demon one. Yeah.
Fair enough. The Neon Demon is I enjoy the hell out of it. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as I did Drive. But I do like it. I will agree. I do like the score more than the movie, but I still like the movie a little bit because it just gets really crazy and weird. And it goes from this movie about a girl who wants to start a modeling career into a horror feature, and it kind of just turns all of a sudden. And I'm all for that. I'm a weird person that's like, holy shit, this is just going in a completely different direction, but why not? Very dearly. And my brain and I still grapple with that movie sometimes. I just rewatched it. I watched that movie mainly because for the visuals, not for storyline.
And there are some movies that are worth it just for that too. You know, there's going to be some where it's like, hey, I feel like this needs a better story or what have you. But hey, man, those visuals, boy, howdy, beautiful. You know?
And that's what I mainly watch it for. I can't tell you what's it about. Like, with people, would I recommend The Neon Demon? Not necessarily. I recommend it only if you're like a big fan of Nicholas Winding Refn. If you dug Only God Forgives, which is another story he did, I think you can appreciate The Neon Demon, because after I saw Bronson and I saw Drive, especially Drive, and then I do remember there's a trailer of Only God Forgives, and they used the score for the movie from Cliff Martinez, that Sechen Want to Fight, and is just very much this techno type of dance on. And you got Ryan Gosling working back with Nicholas Winding Refn, the same composer and score. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh, sweet, another movie. It's going to be just like Drive. Nope. Only God Forgives is nothing like Drive. It's right. It's a lot more of a slower paced movie than Drive was. And I know people complain about the length of Drive, but if you complain about the length of Drive, you're really going to complain about the length of Only God Forgives. And I can appreciate moments of that movie. I think Kristen Scott Thompson does a really great performance as his like over demure mother in that. I thought she was great.
Oh, she's great in everything.
You know, and then I saw the trailers for the Neon Demon, and I'm thinking, oh right, Elle Fanning, okay, sweet. I'll go watch the movie about this young girl that wants to become a model, and she meets up with these other women that want to go out to destroy her. And yes, it's a kind of a fun take on the whole fashion industry, but there's not much of a story to that one, really. I just like that one because it's got this great color palette, and I think the score just adds so much to it. It's one of those movies I like putting on with my home stereo system and like pumping the soundtrack to it.
There you go.
Because even the opening credits, that little like haunting thing he does, that little like yeah, and it's really just he evokes music right away that gets you sort of infused with the product that you're watching. Like it's like a drug. Once it starts,
music definitely has been taking that pace lately, where it's subduing you under a spell in a way.
But it's like this very slow effect, because most stores, they start with like this big, huge, bombastic, like, here it is, folks. You know, it's Star Wars. It's got that big, huge, yeah, it's like this big, huge, like, all right, folks, we're coming in strong. And Cliff Martinez is like, you know what? I'm going to slowly sink my way in here, all right? And I'm going to just slowly just kind of rest in here, in your ear hole, just calmly, you know, nicely and seductively just put myself in here. And then I'm going to gradually increase the tension as it goes on.
Right.
And so, yeah.
You need someone who can do that, because there's so many who will work with filmmakers who are so ego-headed, and it's like, that's a cool score, but it plays at the wrong times or too early, or it's such a step down from the better work, you know. And then there's others that kind of show their age. Now, Hans Zimmer, I can't decipher his last 20 Christopher Nolan scores. I know John Williams got some critique over kind of phoning it in on the Force Awakens score. So it is cool just to see others that will try different projects. And Cliff, would you rank him in your top 20 composers?
Oh, he would be in my top, I would say, yeah, probably about top even five, top 10. Top 10. Yeah. I'll put him up there. Yeah, I like who he's collaborating with here. I kind of want him to go out of his wheelhouse a little bit, and maybe I want him to collaborate for a Disney movie.
Ooh, what kind of Disney movie?
I know they have so many properties right now. No, like an actual perhaps animated.
Ooh, I could see him doing a good Pixar score.
Yes, exactly. Yep. 100% Pixar. Oh, like if they ever did like a follow-up to WALL-E, I could see him doing something like that. No, for sure. WALL-E, which is now part of the Criterion Collection.
Nice.
Yeah.
I had no idea, but that's amazing.
Yep. They just put WALL-E out on their Criterion label. They're coming out with a whole new 4K Blu-ray edition of WALL-E. Yeah. Their first collaboration with Disney.
Damn.
Yeah. So I don't know, but if Cliff Martin, or maybe he should do the music for Red Hot Chili Peppers biopic.
Oh, well, if he's still on good terms with them, maybe.
You know, I think that'd be kind of cool. I would love that. Oh, like I was rewatching like Starface. And I'm thinking, you know, Cliff Martinez, he could do this too. He could have done the score for Starface as well. Yeah.
Some kind of party movie.
Yeah. No. No.
Very awesome.
But yeah, that's I got nothing else to kind of go over with Cliff Martinez, because I mentioned all my favorite stuff that he's done, and mentioned about Pump the Volume and then Drive and everything, and what he did for Steven Soderbergh. So I'll mention one last thing about Steven Soderbergh. So do you remember that Psycho remake that Gus Van Sant did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Steven Soderbergh, he put together an edit that combines the Alfred Hitchcock Psycho the Gus Van Sant one together.
Did he work on that? Did he do the
music? He did. It's called Psychos, and he put the Gus Van Sant one back in black and white. And
right. I did see that one. I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, so he's doing even being more experimental. He's using the best takes of either movie.
Yeah, and it does. It plays like the best version. And I'm like, oh, all right. Because there are some shots in the Gus Van Sant Psycho. I'm like, yeah, that was kind of a better shot of that. And yeah, he kind of goes back and forth between the Hitchcock original. And it's kind of fun to watch that kind of play with each other, because it's a shot for shot remake, so you of course seems you're gonna put well together. And yeah, I did the man for taking chances like that, so good on you, Soderbergh.
Absolutely.
Hey,
how about that? So altogether, why do you say he appeals the most? Is it just that he kind of just, the music kind of peeks into your soul a bit, or does it?
I think that I just like very much the electronic way. It feels like when I listen to the Neon Demon, for example, it feels like I'm walking into a CD nightclub. Like I'm walking into this low grade bar, like the CD store strip club bar that I shouldn't be going into, but yet I'm going to go in this place, and I just love the vibe of that very much. Or to something like Solaris, where I kind of feel like it's a nice, relaxing Sunday afternoon, and I'm just enjoying, even though the movie's about space, the score for it just kind of feels something I'll put in the background while working, and it just inspires me to think in other projects that are right out there, which I love.
Nice.
Yeah, so I like the different vibes. So when he can make me feel kind of intense, he can make me feel relaxed in other parts. And yeah, I did that very much. He's definitely one of my favorite electronic composers next to, I would say, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Definitely similar, because again, yeah, they've been big musicians all this time, and now they're...
And all came from bands, and like Clint Mansell, who was in a band called Papa Eat Itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so just taking that electronic vibes and doing things with it, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like early Howard Shore in a way.
Yeah, Howard Shore is kind of the king of just messing around with piano, and just has so many underappreciated scores that he's often, because there hasn't been too much of a demand, he's often just taking scores for his other movies and just hitting them on like soundtracks that had like two different movie scores. So
yeah,
as a result, you basically got four soundtracks total.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah.
How that works. I see a little bit of Tangerine Dream.
Oh, sure.
I can't think about that. He isn't inspired by NIN or Tangerine, because, I mean, he's just so much about just illustrate the why. You know, what is going on in the character's mind, you know?
I'll ask you, did you prefer, for Legend, did you prefer the Tangerine Dream score or the Jerry Goldsmith score?
Oh, I haven't even thought of that. I don't know if I've heard, I mean, I've seen the movie, but I don't know which version. Maybe it was the director's cut, I think. So I guess that's the Goldsmith.
Yeah, the Goldsmith was the director's cut. And
okay. There's your answer. Yeah, I don't think I've heard that. So
okay, all right. Because I think I just recently watched it with the director's cut with the Jerry Goldsmith score, but I always prefer the Tangerine Dream score.
Well, and they're just so endlessly talented. I mean, they're one of their main guys, Christopher Frank, has gone on to do lots of scores, and You like to see, again, these guys evolve over time, and Cliff was like already evolving before he even needed to.
Sure, yeah. No. But well, this yeah, is a
delight here. What are you working on next?
Oh, thank you very much, Tim, for saying so. So yes, Cinema Recall. We are actually putting together an episode. Actually, we just released an episode now. We had on the first time ever we actually had on live guests in our studio.
Alive. Damn.
Live guests. Actually, people came into the studio. We had a film projectionist from the Parkway Theater come in, and we talked about film preservation and the importance of holding on to actual film, and that was really kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And then at the same episode, we had on a musician. Her name is Kristen Lay. She is in a group called May Music, and me and my guest co-host, we just discuss our favorite concert movies, and we had a fun conversation. Both episodes are out now at cinemarecall.net. I know coming up we're going to be featuring a horror author to talk about our favorite werewolf movies. And I know we're going to be, I believe, featuring Najara Townsend, who is the actress from the movie The Stylist, as well as Contracted. I know she'll be on an episode I think after that one. And then I think we're going to be doing a Halloween extravaganza with one of my buddies, Scott, and I believe the band The Stonedest. So I have a little Halloween extravaganza going on there. But yeah, it's been good. I do the episode. Every episode is hosted by me and my best friend of over 20 years, Ashley Rock. I couldn't
tell. I'm just kidding.
No, that's right. No, yeah, we hate each other so much. Yeah, so. But we have good times, and we like dark movies. I'm hoping to get you on our show very shortly, hopefully after November or so. And
whatever you're thinking, my dude, I will make time for you.
You will? Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that very much, man. And yeah, just
thank you for this. I was looking forward to this. It's like I didn't know where this conversation was going to take us. Other than that, we both like the guy, but I was this was a cool.
He's a cool. Yeah, he's cool.
Typical composer to illustrate.
You mentioned before, he just does the work that needs to be done, and
he's on high profile stuff. You can literally just work with artistic, just experiments.
And he doesn't do the same score all the time, which I appreciate very much.
Right. Never. And even if he did have like a leftover moment that he used in another movie, how can you tell? You would have to listen to it maybe 20 more times before you finally figure exactly. that out.
Oh, I'm ready to him destroy one of our audio dramas. Yes.
For sure.
He's not doing the work right now. I didn't call him up right now and be like, Cliff, you need to work. You need money. Well, I have no money, but you want work. Help us out. I will pay you in cookies, all right? Or actually, if you store for us, maybe Ashley would give you a massage. That's about it. I don't know.
For now.
That's all we have.
That's all we got.
That's all we got. Yeah, we're poor.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.